How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan. In a second, both Harrison and I. Yes, I let Harrison in on another interview.
We already recorded it. He didn't lock me out.
Though he did joke that I might. Harrison and I spoke to John Ireland already. We're going to get to that here in a second. But before we get to that, make sure you're following the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek.com and on the SeatGeek application to get $20 back from your first purchase using the application. Basically, the conversation, it kind of started last time we talked to John, and if you haven't listened to that show, you're going to want to go back and listen to it. He was great in that one. He was really good in this one as well. He talked a lot about how the Lakers needed the kids to pop. So that's kind of where we started the conversation. Then it promptly became story time. Like, we talked about, you know, some of the playoff talk, but then it became story time. And Harrison,
nobody really has better stories than John Ireland about the Lakers. He travels with the team. We got a story that I had definitely not heard about Shaq, and another one that I had not heard about Kobe and Derek Fisher. Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to stay tuned for those.
Turns out Shaq's a terrible organist.
Yeah, Shaq's a terrible organist and a very good protest organizer.
Organizer, get it?
Okay, let's just cut to the interview.
You get it? Well, we got to talk for a little bit longer. I do want to talk to you, though, really quickly, because as we were talking to John, some news kind of broke. Chris Broussard lofted the idea out there of Jose Calderon potentially being waived by the Lakers, and if he does get waived, that he would go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. John talks about it. You're going to want to hear that. That's near the end of the show. But I wanted to get your two cents and my two cents on it. I don't think it happens. What do you think?
No, I kind of said it during our talk with John, so I don't want to repeat myself too much. But I just don't see them making a move.
Yeah, and then the other one that kind of occurred while we were talking to John,
but we didn't address with him because we didn't see it until after we got off. Shouts to Honi Amadian of Lakers Outsiders.
Yep,
Honi.
And I'm reading this from Adrian Wojnarowski. He goes, Atlanta general manager Wes Wilcox started informing teams Monday afternoon that the Hawks were no longer working to unload Millsap, sources said. Millsap can be a free agent this summer, and multiple teams, including Denver, Sacramento, and the Los Angeles Lakers, had an interest in making a deal for him, sources said. So I don't buy it, to be completely honest.
I mean, I think it's what did he say? He said some interest.
Some interest. So like that. Could
I buy it. The Lakers probably had some interest in making a deal for Paul Millsap. I don't think that they had. They obviously didn't have enough to make a deal, and they obviously weren't willing to throw away the farm. And I think the thing that people always run with this is, oh, the Lakers, they were after another guy that they're not going to be able to retain in free agency. They were going to short circuit the rebuild, but they didn't do it. I mean, they were interested, but they didn't do it. And I think that maybe, like, up to a certain point, they were willing to give up an asset for Paul Millsap, but it obviously wasn't enough to get Atlanta to bite.
So here's why I don't buy it. And sure, like semantically, technically, yes, you're probably right that the Lakers were interested in somebody at good at basketball like, as Paul Millsap is.
All that has to mean is that Mitch Kupchak called up and he said, hey, what do you want for Paul Millsap?
So, well,
and then
or,
if the conversation is like, we want, you know, this guy, and this guy, and he says, okay, no thank you, and hangs up, then still technically he registered interest in Paul Millsap.
Or Atlanta called the Lakers and said, this is what Denver is offering. What do you, you know, would you be willing to match something close or give us a better offer, right? Like, it doesn't have to be Mitch calling because, again, I go back to the conversation that Mitch had with Mike Bresnahan. He didn't sound at all interested in making too many calls about this stuff.
No, and he's said that in every – he told Mark Medina pretty much the same thing, and he told Eric Pincus pretty much the same thing. And so, I mean, Mitch, he's been – you know, we talk about this with John Ireland a little bit. He's cagey in his interviews. He doesn't like to give up information that he doesn't want out there. But I don't – I mean, the team vibe is so good right now. I just don't get the sense that they're going to make a trade.
And then lastly, the other reason I – and this is what I was going to say a second ago, but – Adrian Wojnarowski sounds really plugged into the Atlanta front office, right? He's really plugged in all over the place. One of the few places he doesn't sound all that plugged into is with the Lakers. And
In recent years, he seemed to have a little bit more sourcing there, but sure.
Compared to other teams, though, I would say this. And I saw his tweet earlier, and I laughed out loud when I saw it, when he said that the Hawks are now pulling Paul Millsap off the market. Right. And I laughed at it because it's such an obvious leverage ploy. And in the NBA, one of the best ways to get yourself any kind of leverage is to say that the Lakers are interested in either your client if you're an agent or your player if you're a team trying to get a good deal for that player. Right. And it, because the Lakers just as you know this from SEO stuff, they are great headline grabbers. And in this
true,
one,
this podcast is just going to be called Lakers Trade Rumors, Lakers Trade Kobe Bryant for Michael Jordan, who's better, LeBron James, count the rings.
That was my original thought. You didn't want to go with it, but that was your call. so, again, I looked at the tweet, I laughed at the tweet, and it sounds to me like Atlanta, some source within Atlanta, it might even be Wes Wilcox, is basically texting Woj, hey, buddy, do you mind maybe getting the name out there? We talked to the Lakers. I called them. I got to Mitch's voicemail even. Does that
or,
count?
I mean, it doesn't have to be, hey, but it can be like he says, hey, no, we aren't trading Paul Millsap anymore. And then all of a sudden that's like a report.
Yeah. So the Paul Millsap stuff runs too contrary to all kinds of stuff. But enough of us rambling on this. John was tremendous. He was really a lot of fun on here, and we always greatly appreciate when he makes time for us.
We talked a little bit about this trade stuff with him at the end and what he thinks about the Lakers making a move. But I think one of the only things that can compare to John as far as like greatness for this show is SeatGeek, right?
SeatGeek. We have done. SeatGeek as an application is as easy as it. I just bought tickets over the weekend. I went to a Ducks game over the weekend. Use SeatGeek. It was great. I initially, because of, you know, habit or whatever, I kind of looked around a little bit, and like none of the other applications, because I was also interested in comparing. I looked at other applications and none of them made as much sense, were as easy to use as SeatGeek is. And again, I bought the tickets. I showed up. They scanned my phone. I walked in there and I proceeded to watch a sport that I know nothing about.
Well, I actually did a similar over the weekend. I think I've told the listeners before about my friend's birthday plans. Mm-hmm. For two of my friends have birthdays right together. So I bought the three of us and another friend of mine and tickets to go see the Lakers play the Magic last night. They had a great time. They got tacos. They were excited about it. And, like, it couldn't have been easier to buy the tickets on my cell phone. All I had to do was figure out, we had a group text going, what game can you go to? What game can you go to? Once we figured it out, it probably took me, it took me less time to buy the tickets on SeatGeek than it did to figure out what game we could go to by scheduling with my friends, mm-hmm. which is probably the best endorsement that I can give it.
Yeah, that's as good as it gets. Again, they have the deal score, they have price alerts. It's a really easy interface to use. I can't stress that enough. Go ahead, use the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek to get $20 back from SeatGeek on your first purchase.
I got mine relatively quickly.
That's good to know. All right, enough rambling. Let's go to Ireland. We'll talk to everybody after the interview. It's a really good one. And we're joined by John Ireland of 710 ESPN. He's the radio voice of the Los Angeles Lakers. This is his second time on the show with us. We somehow blackmailed him into coming onto the show one more time. And I also let Harrison in on this interview. So that's also fun. Thanks very much for joining us, John.
Anytime, boys. How you both doing?
Pretty good.
I can't complain. The year has had its ups and downs so far, obviously. And fortunately, we're on what looks to be an uptick right now. I kind of wanted to start the conversation with this because I feel like it's the largest storyline surrounding the Lakers. But we talked a lot on the last show about, you know, one of the lottery talents that the Lakers have selected has to pop in order for this rebuild to really be able to take hold the way that the Lakers hope it does. From my standpoint, I think they've shown flashes, but I'm interested in your take on it.
I agree with you. They've shown flashes, but nobody's there. Like, you can't look at Ingram or Russell or Randall or Clarkson and say, okay, that guy's going to be an all-star. Mm-hmm. At least not yet. But Ingram, for a 19-year-old, has made some plays, guys, particularly over the last 10 days, 8 to 10 days, where you look at him and go, wow, there aren't a lot of guys in the league that can do that. And the guy he reminds me the most of, and I'm certainly hoping he turns into this, is Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. When I saw him play as a rookie, he missed most of his jump shots, a lot like Ingram did in the first 2 months of the season. He looked a little lost. He kind of looked like a baby deer trying to learn how to run, which I think Ingram looked like a couple of times. But now if you watch him, particularly over these last two or three games, when he's averaging 16, 17 points a game, he's blocking shots, he's playing defense, he's being used at least in stretches as a point guard. If you made me pick which has the better pop, I would probably bet on Ingram. And I say that full well knowing that Russell and Randall's numbers have probably been a little bit better. I'm not down on either one of them. I'm just really high on Ingram.
Yeah, Go ahead, Harrison.
I think the interesting thing with Ingram and the Antetokounmpo comparison that you made is that seems to kind of be the template now for when you're bringing one of these really long guys into the league that has like some ball handling ability, is now like, let's play them at point guard and see if they can do it. Because even if they can't, then at least the team is figuring out whether or not they have some secondary ball handling abilities or whatever. And that kind of seems to be something that started with the Thunder doing that with Russell Westbrook, and then now the Bucks are doing that with the Antetokounmpo, and now the Lakers are bringing Ingram off the bench as kind of their point guard. I mean, what do you kind of think of that trend?
Well, I agree with you. I think that more teams are trying it because, you know, you're looking for these wing players. If you look, guys, at the people that are dominating the league, it's usually a wing player, a guy, you know, 6'4 to 6'8, who has a full set of skills in terms of scoring, ball handling, rebounding, defending. And I think they're trying to develop Ingram in that mold. And, you know, Harrison, what surprises me is you're right. They have been handing him the ball at least once a game and telling him to bring it up against the other team's point guard. And the other night he had to do it against Mike Conley. And, you know, then he did it against Goran Dragic. And, you know, there were times last night where Ingram was bringing the ball up and he was, you know, being absolutely bird-dogged by Evan Fournier. And I didn't foresee that when he got there. I always thought that, especially with the Lakers' affluence of guards, for lack of a better word, that it would always be Russell, Clarkson, Young, Lou Williams, one of those dudes, or even Calderon or Huertas coming off the bench when they needed a point guard. And Luke has decided, for whatever reason, that he's going to let Ingram play point guard for at least part of almost every game this year. So that's been really fun to watch.
One thing I've noticed, because you did mention how the last 10 days or so, it seems like Ingram has really taken a pretty large step forward, which is something he's able to do with how long his legs are. But one thing I've noticed with him is he's really attacking the physicality of basketball, whereas when he first came into the league, he would get hand-checked, and he'd get knocked way off his course when he was driving. And then now I really see him attacking a defender's front foot, his top shoulder, whatever it might be, and he's really forcing his own physicality upon whoever's defending him. You're watching these guys night in, night out in person. Have you noticed that, and have you talked to him at all about any kind of decision to be more physical?
Yeah, I actually asked him about it last night, Anthony. I saw the same thing you did, and I said, it seems to me that you're putting your head down and driving straight into traffic rather than backing out and shooting over it. Is that a conscious decision? And he said, absolutely, because I realized that most of these teams are guarding me with players shorter than I am. And so if I go down and post them up, then they'll put a bigger guy on me. And when the bigger guy's on me, I feel like I can beat him off the dribble, and that's what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and look at game tape of Ingram in the first 10 games compared to game tape of Ingram in the last 10 games, he would always try and shoot over the defense, and he wasn't making a lot of those shots. Now he's made 16 of his last 28 shots, and he's making his threes. He's gone back-to-back 6-for-9 in games. I mean, he's got his confidence back, and I think one thing leads to the other. So he's got his confidence that he's going to make his outside shot, so now teams are going out on him, and when they do, he's blowing right by him, and as you say, throwing his body at the defense, and he's getting calls, and he's getting to the free throw line, he's starting to make his free throws. And by the way, so is Randall. You guys remember that last year, Randall was a lousy free throw shooter, and this year he's shooting north of 70%. So you can't foul Randall or Ingram anymore, because they'll make you pay at the line. I noticed the same thing you did. I think he's made a conscious decision to basically throw his body into the defense, and he's got the ability to finish if they don't hit him, and if they do hit him, he'll just take the free throws.
Yeah, and the theme at the beginning of the year was sustainability. When they were 10-10, it was, is this sustainable? Is this something that the Lakers can continue to build on as the year moves forward? And I was always a little hesitant to say that it was. And then over the last couple games, and granted it's against Orlando and it's against the Hassan Whiteside and Justice Winslow-less Heat, those aren't very good teams. But the success, as it's centered around the young core, where it's, you know, D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, or Brandon Ingram dominating for stretches of last night's game, that feels a lot more sustainable than, or it feels a lot more positive than it did back when it was Nick Young and Lou Williams. They've kind of slumped the last couple games. The Lakers have won anyway. So the actual drive towards the playoffs, does it feel a little bit more sustainable now than it did early on in the year where they were still, you know, part of the playoff picture?
I can't tell. It's a good question, but I can't tell. I you know, they've won 3 out of 4. The game you didn't mention that I was most impressed with was the Memphis game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won at home against Memphis, then we went up to Portland, and they blew a big lead, which is, you know, the DNA of this team. They get big leads and then blow them. I really liked the Memphis game, and then they took care of business against Miami and Orlando. And it was interesting, guys, when we were down there the week before Christmas. I think we played the Heat on the 21st, and or maybe the 22nd, and the Magic on the 23rd. And those were games that they could have won. They jumped out to a 19-point lead in Miami, and they just seemed out of gas in Orlando. But those were games they should have won. And the fact that, and you mentioned it, that Miami had a ton of injuries and Orlando's not very good, but those were games that earlier in the year they were blowing anyway. They were losing them anyhow. They were finding ways to not win them, particularly when they had big leads. So I was encouraged by that. But are they a playoff team? They're 2 games out of the 8th spot. So it's certainly within reach, but I look at those other teams around them. I certainly think Portland's a little better than they are this year. Maybe Sacramento is better than they are this year, although they did win at Sacramento early in the year. So I, for one, would be surprised if the Lakers made the playoffs. I think they're about a 35-win team. I think the 8th seed's going to be around 40. I can see the 8th seed actually having a losing record, being like 40 and 42. But I don't know if 35 will get you in. And I've always had the Lakers at around 35. I hope I'm wrong, but that's just kind of what I think.
They've been pretty good over the last 10 to 15 games. Over the last 15, they have the 14th best net rating in the league. And that's not, obviously, that's not like jumping off the page impressive, but that's an average team, which is a lot better than they were during December. And, you know, you mentioned them making adjustments and taking care of Orlando and Miami after not doing so when they were in Florida. And then you also talked about Ingram saying that he had absolutely made the adjustment to try and be more physical and go more at smaller defenders. Has it kind of surprised you how quickly this young team is making adjustments to their mistakes? Because isn't that kind of normally the you talked about their DNA is blowing leads, but I think the other DNA normally of a young team is that they don't really learn from mistakes all that well or that quickly. But this team seems to be making adjustments, right?
Right. And well, remember, too, that Ingram's really the only rookie. That, you know, he's the only one that didn't go through the beatdown of last year. All those other guys, Nance and Randall and Russell and, you know, even Young and Williams went through, you know, a 17-win season and kind of took their lumps. And at times, it almost seems like they're dragging Ingram kicking and screaming with them into the new year, and he's just caught up to them. So it doesn't surprise me that they've matured. I thought they would after getting their lumps last year. But Ingram has surprised me. We're sitting here, you know, in the first week of January when we're taping this, and I thought it would take him till at least the All-Star break to get a feel for the game, but he seems to already have it. And, you know, that's a really good sign for them. So I guess to answer your question, I'm not surprised that the other guys are getting better because they took their lumps last year. Throw Ingram into the mix, you didn't know what to expect from him, but I knew, let's put it this way, I knew they weren't going to be a 17-win team again. I thought they would, you know, originally I had them at about 27, jumping about 10 games up, and now I've got them at around 35, and if you double your win total in any year to year, that's a really good sign, and I think they have a chance to do that this year.
Yeah, I mean, all they have to do to surpass last season's total is win 3 of the next 41. So I think they're probably going to manage that.
Yeah, I might cry on the air if they don't. That would be severely disappointing.
Yeah, I think that if they're on like a 3-37 streak going into the last game, I don't think you're contractually obligated to show up. I don't know, but I think you're either allowed to cry on the air the whole time or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. That one particular problem. We have a lot to worry about, but I don't think that's one of them.
So you talked earlier about the playoff talk, and kind of the way I put it last night, for today's show, was basically that I still don't see them making the playoffs. But earlier,
I don't either.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
But early on in the year, when people were, you know, because they got off to that 10-10 start, and people were over the moon with this team, which is perfectly fine. Like it was really exciting for me as well. But I was a lot more hesitant back then to buy into any kind of playoff talk because, frankly, this core this year hadn't gone through any real adversity. And then now this year they go through December, which was a giant kick, you know, it was a giant Draymond kick. And they come out on the other end and they don't look despondent. They learn from their mistakes. You hear Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, they go through the adversity and they take it as, you know what, we should probably start pushing each other more. And so now I'm looking at it. I still don't think they'll make the playoffs, but I feel a lot better about the team's direction right now after this, you know, 3 out of 4 win stretch than I did even back when they were 10-10. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, one of the reasons is I think that they probably weren't as good as 10-10, but they definitely weren't as bad as the, you know, 2-15 they went in December. So you wonder, you know, which team is closer to what they are. And I think what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 games is they're probably a little closer to 10-10. They're a little closer to 40 wins than they are to 20 wins. And I think that's a good sign. And the person that's kind of set the tone for that is Luke.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just never really got down on them. He lost his head in Sacramento when he thought Boogie Cousins wrestled Randall to the floor with no whistle. And he just decided to get himself thrown out and went bananas. But other than that, he's been ridiculously upbeat. And I'll share one story with you guys that, you know, I've been around a lot of coaches. I've been working with the Lakers since before Phil Jackson. I came in there in the Del Harris years, and I've never seen a coach watch film and be married to the job more than Luke Walton is. I mean, if you go anywhere and run into him, he's working. And I'm talking about if I got to go talk to somebody in the front of the plane about something, I sit in the back of the plane. And so when I walk from the back to the front, I have to go past Luke. You know, guys, we've probably been on 10 or 11 round trip flights this year. I haven't been on a flight where I've made that walk where I haven't seen him looking at game film. The other day in Miami, I went down to the pool and I jumped in the pool and I swam for a little while and I came out and I ran into Luke and Jesse Mirmus sitting on lounge chairs poolside looking at iPads of game tape of the game before, and which was a game we lost in Charlotte and blew a big lead. And so they are completely committed to this process. They are every single day pushing these guys, every single day building them up. And I just think that I thought Luke would be good. I thought he'd be a good hire. I didn't think he'd be this good. I think he's taking this as seriously as anyone you could have found to take this gig. He's completely engulfed in it, and he sees what this could be, and he's just him and that staff have married themselves to it. So their work ethic is as good as anybody's. And remember, I was around Phil both times, the first time in, and Phil had a rule where those guys would get up and meet for breakfast at 7-8 o'clock in the morning, no matter how late we got in the night before. But Luke's cut from that cloth. He's doing things that few other coaches I've ever been around are doing.
Has that translated, do you feel like, to the players? Are they watching more film with him, or is it mostly that him and the coaching staff are watching more, and then they're kind of bringing what they find to the players?
Here is a good way to answer your question. What you'll see a lot is, you know, Brian Keefe or Jesse Mirmus or Mark Madsen or one of these guys on the staff will grab an iPad, and, you know, our video coordinators are a couple of young guys who basically can put any type of game tape together. Like if you say to them, you know, hey, Will, or hey, Jonah, I need to see every single time D'Angelo Russell went right and then came back to his left. You'll have a piece of video where D'Angelo Russell goes right and back to his left 25 consecutive times, and then you'll see him go walk up to Russell and say, let me show you something. And they'll basically say, look, you're tipping your hand. I'm making this up. D'Angelo isn't doing this, but you're tipping your hand here. Every time you go right, you come back to your left. And if we noticed it, people at you know, the other teams are going to notice it. So, you know, a couple of times in this game, when you're going right, go right a little longer and then come back to your left and keep the defense off balance. And so in that way, they're, you know, to answer your question, are the players watching film as much as Luke is? No, but when the coaches see it, they're actually physically sitting next to the players and saying, I hear this phrase a lot, hey, let me show you something. And they will sit them down and say, here is an example of something we think you can, that can make you better. And they'll do it that way.
Yeah, I know Will Scott is about as hard of a worker as there. I don't know Jonah, but Will was with the Defenders last year, and I know all the players there just like couldn't say enough nice things about how hard he worked. So I'm sure
those guys, Harrison and Anthony, those two, Will and Jonah, are probably the hardest working guy in the Laker organization is a guy named Carlos Maples. He's the equipment manager. Whatever they're paying him, it is not enough. He should get a giant raise every year. He is literally on the clock from early in the morning until very late at night. If you think about the logistics of moving a basketball team from city to city and moving all the parts and all the equipment and all the uniforms and all the individual bags that we all bring with us and getting them, you know, sometimes into four different hotels in 5 days, I mean, Carlos earns his check and then some, but right behind him are Will and Jonah. Those guys are on the clock all the time. They never know when their phone's going to ring. I've been friends with a couple of their video coordinators in the league, and these guys are great. They were lucky to get them, and they've got them at a young age. Both those guys are in their 20s. They're grinders, and there'll be some days where they'll be up on their computer working on stuff at 6 in the morning, and then until we land in the new city at 2 a.m. the next day, they're still going. So those guys are earning their keep for sure.
Well, and just so people kind of understand, like, this is kind of how it kind of works in the NBA sometimes. Eric Spoelstra was the Trailblazers video guy, right, for a really long time. And I believe, isn't there a really famous story with Luke Walton talking to a video coordinator in the playoffs and then now, you know, and then relaying the message?
Yes, it was the Warriors video coordinator.
Yeah, that's a guy named Nick O'Hearn, who they consider part of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Hearn, during the finals last year, or it was actually 2 years ago when they beat the Cavs, he was the one who noticed that when Iguodala was out there instead of Bogut, that they were dominating the game, and he went and put together a tape to show Kerr how they had no answers for that lineup, and Kerr ended up starting Iguodala after the first four games of the finals. Mm-hmm. And it was 2-2. The Warriors won the last two games, and they give him a lot of credit for that. So if you don't care who gets credit and you kind of open it up for ideas from anyone, you never know where those ideas are going to come from. And so Luke comes from that world, and so he trusts those guys, and in return, they bring him a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's great to see. I there are a lot of stories like this of the conversation and of the level of discussion that goes on across the Lakers coaching staff and then relaying it to the players. It's great to hear that. But I wanted to go back. I want to have a little bit of fun here. You travel with the team and you talked about, you know, passing Luke on the plane and this and that. And I was wondering, do you have any stories that stick out to you of like the funniest story that you could give us of traveling with this team? Because they seem like a really fun, loving bunch.
Yeah, well, and every group is different. I mean, it depends. Like back in the old days when we were traveling with Shaq and Kobe, we're in a different configuration of a plane and had what basically amounted to as a bed in the back. And so if one of the players weren't feeling well, they could go back there and lay down. Or what Shaq would do is he would bring a keyboard back there. And he would basically, like a giant organ, and Shaq cannot play the keyboard. He doesn't know how to do it. But he would come back there, and not with a pair of headphones, guys. He would just be banging on the keys until finally Phil would get up and go, either play it with your headphones or turn it off. And you know, it became this running joke what Shaq was going to do in every city, because he would always try something goofy. And so one day we were in Portland, and well, I'll give you two about Shaq. One day we're in Seattle, back when Seattle was still in the league, and there were these huge I don't want to call them riots, but they were demonstrations of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and a lot of people were protesting in the streets. And when I say a lot of people, probably 2,000 or 3,000 people walking down the street in front of our hotel. So our bus couldn't get to the front of the hotel where we needed to get in, and Shaq took off his shirt, tied his shirt around his head, got off the bus, and walked into the middle of the street and yelled, "Freedom!" And everybody went, "It's Shaquille O'Neal!" You know, of course, now, this was so long ago, now there would be video evidence of this. Everybody would have pulled out
their phones. Yeah, it would have been all over Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all that stuff.
Right, but back then, none of those things had been invented, and Shaq actually walked the protesters down past our hotel, gave the bus room to go all the way in, like a Pied Piper, and then Shaq just walked back, and he was taking pictures and signing autographs, and that's how we got into our hotel that day. The rookies are normally the people that get made to do, like, they have to sing happy birthday to people over the intercom, and you know, there's a card game going out in the front. It's almost like a fraternity up there. This year, there hasn't been a lot. They made Ingram and Zubat sing to somebody. I think sing to Brian Shaw or maybe to Madsen on his birthday. And that's been about as crazy as it's gotten. But And Sammy, if I've told you this story before, my favorite plane story is from about 7-8 years ago. Remember when Kobe and Fisher were the guards on those championship teams with Pau Gasol and Lamar Odom and everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
All right. So, okay, we're playing a day game in New Jersey. This is before they moved to Brooklyn. And we play a day game in New Jersey, and this was one of the years we won the championship, either in 09 or 10. And we beat the Nets by like 25, complete blowout. And we're on the bus heading back to or hopping on a plane to Detroit, where we're going to play in a couple of days. And Kobe and Fisher are arguing over the Eagles-Giants game, which was the game on Sunday Night Football that week. And they decide, since we're in New Jersey and the Eagles are playing the Cowboys, Fisher's a Cowboys fan, Kobe's an Eagles fan, Philadelphia is only about a 40-minute drive. They say, all right, we're getting tickets, we're going to the game. And they hire an SUV, and they're going to buy plane tickets to meet us in Detroit. And they get it cleared by Phil, and they get in this SUV with two of our security guys, and they head to Philadelphia to go to the game. And at this point, you know, it's about 3 in the afternoon. The game starts at 8. They're going to go grab dinner, and they're going to be fine. And we all get on the buses, and we go to the airport. And I notice, as we've been sitting at the airport, that the plane has been loaded. The luggage truck's gone. We were supposed to leave like 20 minutes ago. And I walk up to Phil Jackson, and I said, hey, why are we still sitting here? And he looks at me, and he goes, you're not going to believe this. And he tells me that story. and you know, that these guys are all excited to go to the game. They're arguing, they're betting on the game. The game was in Dallas.
Oh, no.
they never bothered to check that the game wasn't in Philadelphia. They just
Oh, my God.
So the SUVs had turned around from Philadelphia and were racing back to the airport in Newark, and Phil had given them 30 minutes to get back. He says, if you guys get here in 30 minutes, you can fly to Detroit with us. If not, you're on your own. And so they hightailed it back, and they made it and flew back. But that story, for whatever reason, never got out. You know, in today's day and age, that would have been, like you said, Harrison, all over Twitter, all over Facebook, all over everywhere. But that story, because it was really before all those things had developed, never got out. We played the whole season, we won the title, and nobody ever told it until after the season was over. But that's my favorite plane story, that we sat and waited 30 minutes for these idiots because they didn't think to check where the game was. And if you bring that story up to Kobe or Fisher today, they still laugh about it. They still totally admit that they screwed it up and laugh because they were so stupid.
Well, so I have to ask, Kobe's known for his kind of insane, borderline psychotic preparation. Is that the least preparation you've ever seen him show for any type of plan? Like, just like heading off to Philadelphia, having no idea if the game was there?
Either that, or another time we were in Detroit for Thanksgiving, and we were playing on the Friday night after Thanksgiving. So on Thanksgiving Day, we were all stuck in Detroit. So Kobe, as a very nice gesture, bought Thanksgiving dinner for everybody and set it up at a ballroom in the hotel in Detroit. And he started to realize that in the room we had, they set up this giant room for us, and they put a ping pong table in there. And Kobe just tried to get people to play him in ping pong, and he started betting people, hey, I'll play you in ping pong. I'll bet you $10, I'll bet you $20. And it occurred to me, after watching him play for about 2 or 3 minutes, that he had never played ping pong before. he's a competition junkie. Yep. And he wanted competition. So and Gasol was a very good ping pong player. Mark Shaw, our producer, was a good. Trudell is a very good ping pong player.
Yeah, that's right. I remember Trudell talking about this before. Trudell's like an amazing ping pong player, right?
Yeah, he grew up with a ping pong table at his house in Minnesota, and he played with his brother and his dad, and he's like hyper competitive. And so Trudell played a game with Kobe just for fun, and Trudell killed him, beat him like 20-3 or 21-3, whatever it is. And within 20 minutes, guys, Kobe was playing Trudell. He never beat Trudell, but he was playing him to the point where it was close. Like, it was probably 21-17 the last time he played him. And then one of the security guys told us that after that trip, he went, or after that night, he went back to his room and ordered a ping pong table and had it delivered to his house. So the next time it came up, he would be prepared to beat anybody. He was going to go home and practice. But that's how competitive and how meticulous Kobe is.
Yeah, I could see Kobe, like, there could be an entire montage of him working, playing all kinds of ping pong, and then approaching Trudell with a ping pong pal and saying, "This is happening here."
Yeah, and you know, nobody, including Mike, would have the guts to say, "No, I'm not playing you." You know, it's if nothing else, it's going to be a story.
Yep.
That you're going to be able to tell one day.
Absolutely.
Do you see, I know none of these guys are Kobe yet, obviously, but is there anyone on the team right now that you could see being that competitive? Like, if they lost to Trudell at ping pong, going and buying a ping pong table and trying to beat him next time?
That's a great question. The closest person to it is Clarkson. Clarkson is really, really wants badly to be great. He works on his game all the time. His work ethic and his demeanor did not change at all, guys, as soon as he got that big contract. When he went from making less than $1 million a year to $14 million a year, we all kind of had one eye on him wondering, okay, now that he got paid, is he going to be one of these guys that just relaxes? And he did the opposite. So, I, again, to steal your line, he's not Kobe. Nobody is. But the guy with the drive is Clarkson, and Randall would be in that group too. Be one of those two dudes.
Yeah, I was gonna say Randall is the one who would have been my guess, just based on like post game interviews and stuff. He usually seems to be the most upset in games that they lost.
Well, not only that, he probably works on his game more than, you know, he everybody says Julius Randall can't shoot. If you watch the game last night, he made a three in rhythm of the offense. He was a 50% free throw shooter last year. This year he's north of 70. He works on his game as much as anybody, and I think the player you see now in Julius and the player you'll see 3 years from now will be a different guy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He it's great to watch him work at it. So before we go, and all that stuff was tremendous. We always appreciate it. John Ireland of 710 ESPN, play-by-play guy for the Lakers. Before we go, I don't know if you have any inside information on this or whatever, but Chris Broussard just floated out the idea that the Lakers, if they waive Jose Calderon, might go to he could wind up with the Cleveland Cavaliers. One, do you see the it seemed to me when Mitch talked to Mike Bresnahan on Spectrum Sportsnet that he sounded pretty secure. Mitch never gives 100% concrete answers, but that's as close as I've ever heard Mitch come to saying, "No, we're probably going to ride this one out." One, would you agree with that assessment? And two, where would the Calderon rumor even come from? That seems kind of out of left field.
Well, I'll first of all, in regards to Mitch. Mitch plays as close to the vest as anybody I know, mm-hmm. as anybody I've been around in the league, and I've been in the league 20 years. He's happy to meet media obligations. He's happy to do interviews, but he is very worried about leaks, very worried about tipping his hand, very worried about information getting out that might alert other teams to what the Lakers are thinking. So, if Mitch did that interview with Brez and knew he was going to release Calderon, he wouldn't have changed his answer. Mm-hmm. That's just the way he is. Until it's done, he wouldn't give that up. Now, that's the first I've heard that. And I like Chris and I know him. Here's how I think that could be a possibility. And then I'll tell you why I think it's not. They're absolutely, enamored with Calderon in the Laker front office. They're shocked at how great of a teammate he has been, how he's been basically. Luke has told me that he's like having another coach on the staff. He'll grab players when they come off the court and talk to them. If you watch his body language on the bench, he is He's the first guy off the bench, cheerleading, talking to people. I think Jose could be a coach one day. Having said that, when they put him in the games, when he's been pressed into service, he's been a very suitable backup point guard until he got hurt. I think that if they needed to play him, they could and be completely comfortable with it. But they like him so much, guys, that if Jose was to go to them and say, hey, guys, I got a chance here to go to a playoff contender and be part of their rotation, would you release me? I think the Lakers have so much respect for him that they might do it. Now, the reason I don't think they necessarily will is because the Lakers have had some bad luck with these injuries. Nance is still out. Calderon himself got hurt. Russell got hurt. At the same time, Randall got hurt. And so I think as insurance, since they have him under contract, they would like to keep him. But they have so much respect for him, and in particularly Luke, thinks so highly of Calderon that if Calderon were to ask them for his release, I think it would be hard for the Lakers to just say, you know, just dismiss it. I they like him so much, I think they would try and keep him happy. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And all that made perfect sense. I've noticed the same kind of stuff from Calderon. You know, watching the games on TV, it's kind of hard to see the bench at all times. But every time I look over there at the bench, when you get the opportunity to, he's talking to somebody. You know, and it always looks like he's talking to that person with a purpose, and that whoever he's talking to seems, you know, riveted by whatever coaching he might be giving him. So I'd actually be kind of
right.
disappointed to find out that the Lakers would release him. And I would say if it did happen, I would see it being the scenario that you put forth.
Well, and remember too, guys, that because of Marcelo Huertas, who they also like, one of those guys is expendable, not both, but one of those guys you could release and say, okay, now that we know Ingram can play a little bit of point, we're really three or four deep at point guard. We've got Russell. We've got Ingram. We have either Huertas or Calderon, whichever one you would keep. And then if you need Lou Williams or Nick Young to play point, you really could do it that way. So it's a position where you could afford to make a move. But again, I only think that they would consider releasing Jose if he asked for it. I'd be very, you know, I don't know everything, but I'd be in it, and it's a cold business. But I'd be very surprised if they just walked out today and said, hey, Jose, we don't need you. You're gone. I think it would be, that would be odd.
Yeah.
With that being said, would you, I mean, do you see the team kind of standing pat at the trade deadline? I mean, that would be just as kind of an outside observer. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I know they're going to get calls about Lou Williams, and they're going to get calls about Nick Young. Lou probably more than Nick, because Lou has a contract for this year, and then he has a contract for next year, and it's $7 million each year, which by NBA standards is pretty cheap.
It's a bargain
Nick
for what
he's
doing.
Nick is a little more of a rental. Yeah, Nick is a little more of a rental. He can opt out of his contract at the end of this year, and most people expect him to. So if you were to trade for Nick Young, it would really only be for a team this year who thinks they could compete with Cleveland or Golden State, and that list is small. You know, maybe San Antonio, maybe Toronto, maybe Houston, maybe the Clippers. But yeah, I'm with you. I'd be surprised if they made a move. I think they're going to stand pat.
Yeah, and the other factor here is that it seems like this front office, more than I would, no, I wouldn't, I'm not going to go that far, but this front office really seems to value chemistry as they build this young core up. That I think, you know, keeping Meta around was a statement of, we really, even if Meta has, and he's been a disaster on the court, but when he's off the court, working with Randall, working with Nance, working with whomever, they really seem to value the chemistry of this group coming together. And I, you know, I'm not really the, it's hard because it's impossible to quantify chemistry, but you don't want to ignore it altogether. And it's cool to watch these Lakers think of it from that perspective.
Right. And you should add too that, you know, they had to make a roster decision at the end between Anthony Brown and Thomas Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
And you put Meta in that group. They were going to keep two of the three. And Thomas Robinson has actually been great.
Absolutely.
He's played so well that they've had to put him into the rotation. So when your collective group, when your first guy all the way down to your 13th or 14th guy is contributing, that chemistry builds naturally. So I think they would prefer to keep these guys together and not split it up. But you got to answer your phone. You know, I heard there's a guy, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a guy that plays for Cleveland named Jordan McRae,
mm-hmm.
who lit the Lakers up in a summer league game for 36 points. He looked really good.
It was pretty insane.
And Michael was telling me today that, they were talking, Mike Dunleavy looks like he's going to go to Atlanta as part of that Korver trade. But at first with that Cleveland situation, to make room for Korver, when they were trying to maneuver it, they were talking about releasing Jordan McRae. Now, if a guy like that became available, I think you got to look at it. Mm-hmm. And right now the Lakers don't have an available roster spot, but, that's something that I don't think any of that's going to happen. It now appears that Korver's going to Cleveland and Dunleavy's going to Atlanta, and it's all going to work out. But the situation becomes that, they gave up Mo Williams' roster spot too. So Cleveland's going to have to juggle some roster spots somehow. Mm-hmm. But if a guy like that became available, then that's when you look at juggling your roster. But I know the Lakers, I've talked to people in the front office as recently as this week, and they like the group and they like the roster. I don't think they're looking to change it. It would have to be something landing in their lap.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And again, John, we greatly appreciate you coming on with us again. I hope you had as much fun as we had with you, and we hope to maybe have another conversation along the year or as the year goes along.
Anytime, boys. Good luck with your podcast. I'm a big David Locke disciple who I know is one of your bosses. So keep up the good work, and I'll look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Absolutely.
All right. So that was thanks, John.
That was John Ireland of 710 ESPN. We hope everybody enjoyed that conversation. We'll talk to everybody soon. All right, so that was John Ireland. Again, story time, trade deadline talk, talking about Brandon Ingram's strides forward, playoffs. Like, we hit everything. So
honestly, I could just listen to John Ireland tell stories about the Lakers for like hours.
Yeah,
we would record it just for you guys, but even if like we didn't record it, I'd just sit there and listen to him.
Yeah, he needs to. I know John probably has an agent. I'm floating this idea out there for John's agent. Just have him have a podcast where it's story time with John Ireland.
Hey, hold on now. That could be our podcast. This will be his outlet. It's almost like he should have a radio show of some kind.
It's almost like that would be a good idea, right?
Yeah, on ESPN 710 LA.
And it is really good. He and Mason are a lot of fun there. They also stream their show on Spectrum Sportsnet. Spectrum has been great to us, so I want to make sure to give them a shout out. If you can't listen to them on the radio and you have a TV in front of you, it's actually a pretty fun telecast as well to watch. So make sure you're checking all that out. Make sure you're checking out SeatGeek. Again, this show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLakers to get $20 back to you from SeatGeek. Those guys have been great to us since Locked On Lakers launched, since the Locked On Network launched, really.
Yeah, SeatGeek is Locked On NBA, basically. Like, they are locked on to us.
Yeah, absolutely. You make it sound like they don't have a choice. Today's show was a lot of fun. We have a couple other fun shows for you this week, and then we're going to keep this rolling as the season goes along. Let's hope the Lakers keep rolling as well. We will talk to you after the Lakers hopefully beat the Portland Trail Blazers on Tuesday.
In a pivotal playoff position battle right now.
If the Lakers beat the Blazers, Harrison and I will try as hard as we possibly can to go live right afterwards.
No, not try. We'll make it happen.
Okay, we are going live.
If they beat the Blazers. If they don't, we'll just record via Skype, because you guys don't want to see Anthony cry after a loss.
It's kind of sad. It's really sad. We'll talk to everybody soon. Make sure you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Again, today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLakers, and we will talk to everybody tomorrow.